Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Such a sadhu engages in staunch devotional service to the Lord without deviation. For the sake of the Lord, he renounces all other connections, such as family relationships and friendly acquaintances within the world. English question I have. What does staunch actually mean? Anybody can say? Well, it means it, but the original meaning is waterproof. But a boat won't leak. But a boat is good and it doesn't leak. It's called staunch. So the boat is firm because it doesn't leak water. And therefore the words also mean to mean firm in general. Okay? Prabhupada picked up these words from English poetry from the 19th century. Prabhupada, purport. A person in the renounced order of life, a sannyasi, is also called a sadhu because he renounces everything. His home, his comfort, his friends, his relatives, and his duties to friends and family. He renounces everything for the sake of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A sannyasi is generally in the renounced order of life, but his renunciation will be successful only when his energy is employed in the service of the Lord with great austerity. It is said here, therefore, Bhaktim Kuravantiye Dvidham, a person who seriously engages in the service of the Lord and is in the renounced order is a sadhu. A sadhu is one who has given up all responsibility to society, family, and worldly humanitarianism simply for the service of the Lord. As soon as he takes birth in the world, a person has so many responsibilities and obligations to the public to the demigods, to the great sages, to the general living beings, to his parents, to the family forefathers, and to many others. When he gives up all such obligations for the sake of the service of the Supreme Lord, he is not punished for such renunciation of obligation. But if for sense gratification a person renounces all such obligations, he is punished by the law of nature. Titikshava Karunika was the previous verse. The previous verse was describing who the sadhus, what the sadhus are like. General characterization of the sadhu. But some people think, many people think, that the impersonal sannyasis, impersonalist sannyasis, are also sadhus. Okay, what are you going to do? You've got to call them something, so we'll call them sadhus. But they're not real sadhus. Not as described in the current verse. Mai ananyena bhavena. They're supposed to be completely dedicated to Krishna. They're supposed to have love for him and only think about him. Bhaktim kurvati yedridam. They're supposed to be, the real sadhus, the real renunciants, are supposed to only be engaged, or be always engaged in Krishna's devotional service. And for the purpose of that service, in order to increase and protect their service from distractions, they may give up their families and all other material connections. Prabhupada talks about a person of the renounced order in the purport. But we should not misunderstand out of context. If we've read other purports by Prabhupada, where he explains, says things sometimes in other words, we know that Prabhupada was of the opinion, and that our Vaishnavacharyas are all of the opinion, that not every sannyasi is a true saint, and not every sadhu is necessarily a sannyasi. One can be a pure devotee of Krishna without being a sannyasi, and one can be a sannyasi without being any kind of devotee of Krishna. You'd have to take this one purport completely out of context of all the other things Prabhupada ever said to make it say that a sadhu has to be a sannyasi and that every sadhu is a devotee of Krishna. No way that Prabhupada would intend to mean that. But the verse does talk about renunciation. One who is very strong in his Krishna consciousness can give up his family or avoid ever getting connected with a family. Of course, in a sense, everybody is born into the Grihastha order, because even the saints and sannyasis have parents.
Yeah, Prabhupada says you have to have Grihasthas. There's a reason for Grihasthas, purpose for them. Because how will the sannyasis, the great saints, come into this world unless someone's going to be their parents? They don't just, Prabhupada said in Hawaii in 1976, they don't just fall out of the sky. So the parents are required. Even Shukadeva Goswami, who did not have any interest in anything material, he had his parents also. He was born. Even Krishna was born. Sometimes Krishna is born in unusual ways. In his Varaha avatar, he was born out of the nostril of Lord Brahma. Not normal. He doesn't have a mother, and that wasn't a normal birth. But Krishna very often takes a normal birth. He has his parents very often. And Krishna's devotees, they usually don't bypass the normal process. So anyway, there's therefore some purpose for the Grihastha order. And we understand from Prabhupada's teachings and his practice that Grihasthas can also try to be renounced. and they may succeed in it if they're fortunate and perseverant. The principle is to give up what gets in the way of Krishna's service and accept whatever is favorable for Krishna's service. I read that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati once said, he was a lifelong celibate. He never passed his seminary in his life. But he said once that I would be prepared to have 100 children if I could do it properly. Accept anything that's favorable for Krishna's purposes, for his satisfaction, and reject whatever is unfavorable. And what Krishna wants varies from devotee to devotee. He wants one thing from one devotee and another thing from another. So the principle is Yukta Vairagya, as taught by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Anasaktasya Vishayan Yatarhamupuyunjataha Nirbandha Krishna Sambande Yuktam Vairagya Uchyate. This is appropriate renunciation. It is Vairagya, but it is not modified. It's the proper Vairagya, but it's sensible Vairagya, appropriate renunciation. It's not that this Yukta Vairagya is a compromise and that real Vairagya is something else. This is real Vairagya. And the other kind of Vairagya, of trying to give up everything, that's artificial and false. Or artificial, impossible actually. You cannot give up everything. The sensible renunciation, as defined by Rupa Goswami, is to avoid being attached but accept things for Krishna's service. That means to engage the senses with sense objects, the same sense objects that usually get us in trouble. But if you engage with them for Krishna's service, you can be protected from the trouble. As appropriate, as authorized, as sanctioned, you can do things for Krishna's service without having to avoid everything. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe. One should be busy engaging his senses in Krishna's service. That's appropriate renunciation. And that can only be practiced by one who is in the process of pure devotional service. The sadhus, as defined in this verse, continuing from the previous verse, which gave a very general idea, here it's much more specific. The sadhus that Kapila Dev is talking about are devotees of Krishna, are serious devotees of Krishna, pure devotees. Krishna himself said something very similar in the Yoginava, at the end of the sixth chapter, very last verse of the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He was talking about yogi, being a yogi. He was advising Arjuna to be a yogi, to engage his senses and intelligence in the service of the Supreme. And Krishna recognizes different kinds of yogis. The one who uses is a Jnana yogi, the Karma yogi. He talked about Buddhi yoga in the third and fifth chapters. But at the end of the sixth chapter, he makes an important point. Yoginam api sarve sham bhagatinam taratmana shradhavan bhajate yomam sada yuktatamo mataha. This is, in Krishna's opinion, the best of yogis. The one who has a mamcha yogi avyabhicharena bhakti yogi na sevate. One, Krishna says, who serves me with undeviating devotion. Here it says ananina bhava. Kapila Dev uses the term exclusive. Prabhupada says undeviated mind, exclusive devotion. Krishna uses the term avyabhicharena bhakti yogena. It's the same idea. In devotional service without deviation. No deviation on the side of karma. No deviation on the side of jnana. The interest in karma and the interest in jnana are deviations. from the path of pure devotional service. It's a thin line, a narrow path, and deviation is dangerous. Just like if you're going to visit the Char Dhams, Badrinath, Gangotri, up in the Himalayas, the roads are up the mountains, and you don't have a wide shoulder on the road. If you drive off the road, you drive off the mountain, and you're dead. You have to be careful. You have to stay on the road. Even though the road is dangerous and sometimes slippery with ice on the road, you have to be very careful not to go off the side. Similarly, the path of devotional service is going in a steep, narrow path. And deviation can ruin your progress. And the main deviations are karma and jnana. The tendencies to want to enjoy this world, or the tendencies to want to get your own liberation. If you want either of those, then that covers your desire to be Krishna's devotee. Jnana karma adi anavritam. Pure devotional service, even in practice, cannot be dominated by the motive of either jnana or karma. Otherwise, it's not pure devotional service. It's mixed devotional service. A devotee who's on the path of pure devotional service can fall off that path if he goes off to this either side. So, Krishna is talking about avyavicharena bhakti yogena yomam sevate. The one who serves me in pure devotion without swerving off to the right or the left. He's the best yogi. He's actually yukritamo. He's the most well connected to me among all the so-called sadhus. That's what Krishna said in the 6th chapter of the Gita. And here Kapiladeva is saying very much the same thing. This is the real sadhu. These are the plural, the real sadhus. Those who engage in my service with undeviated mind, with pure love, and are ready to give up whatever is necessary in order to be undeviated and remain fixed. To be ready to give up whatever is necessary. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. This is, I think, Sharanagati defined. Taking shelter of the Lord, which is actually the essence of devotional practice, is learning how to take shelter of Krishna. The purpose of the practice of sadhana bhakti, of course, is to awaken love of God in your heart. But the way to do that is to learn to trust Krishna, to depend on Krishna, and to convince Krishna that he can trust and depend on you. That's what the process is about. So it's a very personal thing. It's not mechanical. You will not earn your devotional degree just by going through the motions and taking the courses and passing some exams. We don't even have any exams. The only test is how you're learning to trust Krishna and how you're showing Krishna that he can trust you. And that is called Sharanagati. Taking shelter of the Lord. And Rupa Goswami describes 6 symptoms or 6 aspects, 6 things that someone who's taking shelter should be doing. Or if you want to learn how to take shelter, you can do these things for practice. Anukulyasya sankalpaha. Accept whatever is favorable. Anukulya. Anukul means favorable. If you want to have some rice to eat, you like to eat rice, or some people, I think the Punjabis can live without rice, and the UP-walas can mostly live without rice, but the Bengalis and the Carnatic people, they cannot live without rice. They have to have it every day, every meal. There must be rice. So if you need to have rice, you have to perform a favorable activity. Anukula vyapara. You have to put the rice in some, you know, you can't eat the raw rice. It's unpalatable and it'll make you sick. if you eat the raw rice out of the bag, you have to put it in water with some salt, or you know, a little bit of salt, a lot of water, and boil it. You have to light a fire. You have to put the pot on the fire. You have to boil the rice, and you have to not boil it too much so it doesn't burn. That's a favorable process for getting cooked rice. Anukula vyapada. So there's anukula vyapadas for establishing your relationship with Krishna. There's things to do that are favorable for devotional service. One should accept whatever is favorable to advancing his devotional service. And second, pratikulyasya vartana. You should conversely give up everything that's unfavorable for your service. If Krishna doesn't like me chewing pan, I should stop it. If Krishna doesn't like me eating non-veg, I should stop it. If my family is not letting me serve Krishna, then I should abandon them or leave them. What's favorable, I accept. What's unfavorable, I have to reject. That's the beginning of Sharanagati, taking shelter of Krishna. So that's what Kapiladeva is talking about. Not that all sadhus have to be sannyasis, but in the cases where that's what's required to advance your service, then the devotees do it. The devotees are ready to do whatever Krishna wants of them, and whatever will make them closer to Krishna. The Pandavas were so close to Krishna. They were so dedicated to Krishna's happiness. Only because Krishna wanted it, they accepted the kingdom. Arjuna didn't want to fight for the kingdom. He didn't want to have to kill his guru, Dronacharya, and his step-grandfather, Bhishmadev, who raised him, and his brothers as children. He didn't want to have to fight against and kill Bhishma and Drona. And therefore he refused to fight in the beginning of the Gita. He said, I don't want the kingdom. Not if it's going to be stained with the blood of my gurus. I don't want it. And then Yudhishthir, for whom this whole fight was done, after the battle he wanted to refuse the throne. Blamed himself for all the deaths and all the ladies left as widows. And he wanted to refuse the throne. But Krishna wanted Arjuna to fight, and Krishna wanted Yudhishthir to sit on the throne. So they accepted finally, with some argument. They accepted, they gave in, and did what Krishna wanted. The Pandavas are so dedicated. They accepted the position of being rulers of a vast kingdom, and all the power and enjoyment that includes, for Krishna's pleasure, because he wanted it. But when Krishna gave the sign at the end of his 125 years on this earth, he arranged for the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty. And then he himself left this world. As soon as the Pandavas heard about that, they took it as a very clear message from Krishna: the pastimes are finished, and no need for you to remain here. So the Pandavas renounced immediately. And Krishna didn't send them an explicit, didn't send them a telegram or a message. You know, now you have to renounce. He didn't say anything. But they understood. Yudhishthir first understood. No reason to keep this position anymore. He immediately took off his royal robes and his ornaments and dressed himself in rags to leave this world. And he started walking toward the north. Of course, Hastinapur, this is UP, Uttar Pradesh. So we're already north. If you take a flight out of the Delhi airport, you can see, as your plane rises up into the air, you can see the Himalayas from 300 kilometers, 400 kilometers away. It's not that far. Once you're up in the sky, you can see the Himalayas, even from Delhi. So we're far north already. But how long it takes about 3 days to drive to the top of Himalayas. It takes a month at least to walk that far. The sadhus do it, even today. They walk up the road all the way to Badrinath. It takes them 1 month, generally, from here. Or even from Hardwar, it takes a month. But that's what Yudhishthira set out to do, to walk north and keep on walking until his body dropped. And that way, he was intending to enter heaven, or actually Vaikuntha, in his self-same body, by just walking and walking north until he died. And his brothers immediately followed him. And so did Draupadi. They just thought, yes, obvious. Krishna wants us to do this. So for Krishna, they accepted the kingdom. And for Krishna, as soon as he gave the sign, they immediately rejected it, renounced it. A devotee can do both. When Krishna wants him to take and accept all sorts of material opulence, he accepts them. And when Krishna tells him, okay, now I want you to give them up, then he gives them up. That's a real devotee. Matkrite chakta karmanas chakta swajana bandhava. For my sake, they can give up everything. They can give up their responsibilities, their material responsibilities and occupation. They can give up their friends and family if Krishna and when Krishna wants it. A devotee can remain a grihastha because his guru tells him that's the right thing for you. And when the guru, the representative of Krishna, tells you, now you should take the renounced order, the devotee should be ready to do it. Whatever Krishna indicates. A pure devotee is ready to do everything for Krishna's pleasure. Hare Krishna. Okay, are there any questions or comments? Yeah.
I have a question. Just a general question. There's a lot of fighting and debating between the Madhva Sampradaya and the Mayavadis and the Ramayana Sampradaya and the Mayavadis.
Yes.
But they kind of have
In a lesser way. You're asking whether the Madhva and Ramanuja Sampradayas, who are always quarreling with the Mayavadis, whether they quarrel with each other. Sometimes. Not so much in public. Not that they have maybe once in a while they have big public debates between the two Vaishnava Sampradayas, but generally they recognize that they are all Vaishnavas even though they have disagreements. So they keep their quarrels more private. But there are disagreements. I know the Madhva Sampradaya, they're very quarrelsome, and they sometimes fight even with each other. Yeah, with one another. We do too. The Gaudiya Sampradaya doesn't have a good record for peaceful relations even among themselves, unfortunately. And it's getting worse with time. One of the things about others, look at our own Gaudiya Sampradaya, we're fighting with ourselves. Others speak about other Sampradayas. Hare Krishna, anything else? Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.